When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is a proud member of the FanHub 100. Football without fans is nothing, so we've partnered with FanHub to put fans first. Search FanHub app to play your part in the journey.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 86 of the Unholy Trinity podcast in association with FanHub, where the fans come first, and our local business partner, Vici Clo. Lee this week is doing some dry ski slope skiing down Mount Pleasant, so he can't make it. So we brought in our usual replacement in El Pivote. Andy, how are you getting on, mate?
I'm good, thank you. I don't mind being the replacement. It's a common job these days now. But the golf season back as well.
I know he's playing golf most days. He's always then he's playing tennis. I think it's a bit of a midlife crisis, to be perfectly honest. But we won't go into
question who he votes for as well. But there you go.
Well, exactly right. Exactly right. We'll leave the politics for this week. But great to have you on the show, mate. As you know, you're always. Always welcome to step into his shoes, to be honest. But we've left it a good few days since we last spoke. We got together last weekend before the Palace game, and we were just saying before these Monday night games throw our schedule right off. But I think it's on this occasion it's been quite good to sit back and just reflect a little bit over the past few days, because it's fair to say, Andy, we just said then heads massively fell off after the late equaliser that was conceded.
Yeah, we've got quite a reactionary fan base, really, and you know, as someone who used to be fairly reactionary in his younger days, I think, you know, it's understandable. I guess at times it's just, I guess my only issue is I think there's lack of perspective sometimes, and I think obviously the emotion gets to people, and I think football, when you make judgments, decisions, whatever in football on basic emotion, you're going to end up, you know, going down the wrong path sometimes. And I think, you know, we'll get on to it in another section, but there's been the trial of Donald Calvert-Lewin this week on Twitter. And yeah, I think it's, at the end of the day, Everton, you know, had chances to win the game. They didn't take them. We drew. That's football sometimes. I think it'd be a different story if, you know, Palace dominated the game and, we snatched a draw from the defeat to victory, but we didn't. We played pretty well, you know, it was just... It just happens sometimes in football. I think a bit of perspective is needed sometimes.
Yeah, of course. And Pete, you know, like Andy said then, I don't think we played particularly poorly, did we? I think, you know, we've seen how we played in recent months, where we've been quite happy to other sides have the bulk of the ball and look to maybe counter. If you look at the Palace game, we missed a hell of a lot of chances on the day, didn't we?
It's a weird one because, yeah, we missed chances that, you know, on a normal day, you'd expect us to put away all day long. We could have had four or five goals when you look at, you know, the extent of how big the chances were. But for me, it was a case of attack and defence. You know, before we conceded, we looked fairly comfortable, I think, dealing with, you know, what Palace had to offer. They were looking to hit us on the counter-attack. And I thought we contained Zaha really well. I thought, you know... As usual, Coleman did a really good job, but it was going forward in possession. We just didn't seem to have a style of play or a method of trying to break Palace down. And I think when the reason I don't like the sort of the 5-3-2, if you like, is you have to play direct. And if you look at a lot of our big chances, they came from, you know, from long balls or quick transitions from the back forward. And I think when that happens, you have to take the chances because you're not going to get that many of them. And it was probably because we were playing Crystal Palace, we got as many big chances as we did, but you run out of options quite quickly. And I think that's why it works against the bigger teams who are looking to attack. You know, it makes them vulnerable to the counter-attack. But it was always that case of the first, not the first goal, but yeah, it was an odd game, and it was the type of performance that I think a lot of Evertonians had sort of hoped we got out of our system, really. You know, it was an important game. I think everybody knew it was a must-win game, and the pundits were saying it was a must-win game. So it's really disappointing that we go out sometimes with a bit of a limp. And I think that's the outrage or the insult. I think, you know, you want your team to go, if you're going to go out or you're going to lose a game like that, you want to go out fighting. So, yeah, I mean, the pressure's on now for the rest of the games. I know we're going to come on to Brighton and the rest of the running, but it's looking like an uphill task, isn't it?
Well, I think that's where the frustration of the fans is coming from, to be honest with you, because in recent weeks, pre-international break and obviously the Palace game, how many times have we said, you know, win this massively, massively important, this game, win this game, push the top four. You know, we knew, you know, two games in hand, we could have been in the top four, we win both those games. We keep on saying the same thing, and we keep on coming away with either a defeat or, in the case against Palace, a draw that should have been a win. And I think, Andy, that's where a lot of the frustration does come from. So when we see the reactions that we saw on Monday night and into Tuesday and so on, the timing of the goal, one, is probably the one really first reason for. But secondly, it's the fact that we just haven't got that that consistency to win the games that we should be winning.
No, and a lot of this comes down to obviously the squad, and you know, I think, you know, Carlo Ancelotti is doing his best. You know, I understand Pete's concerns, and I've got similar concerns over style of play. We don't really haven't, you know, started building what would be you'd term as Everton's way yet, have we? I think we probably might, Carlo might need better players for that. But the issue, I think, you know, the issue with Everton, you know, to go back, I think Everton are a very mismatched squad. We're a squad of different managers, different styles, different systems with the players. And I think, you know, without an overarching plan, I think that's what you end up with. And I think without our best players, you know, Alan didn't play. Decore is obviously out injured. Godfrey wasn't fit to start. I think we lose a bit there, especially obviously in the field and carrying the ball out from the back. I think, yeah, I can understand the fans' frustration, because obviously this season, obviously people will say we missed a big chance. You know, this was the season we had the big chance. I think we are where we probably are in terms of ability. I think, yes, we probably did have chances. You know, Newcastle turned us over twice. But, you know, it's... I think the squad is just, you have to right the wrongs of those sort of that mess before we can get onto that even keel. And I think that's why I think Carlo's, you know, will get a lot more time than, you know, Marco Silva or Aaron Coombe, also due to his, obviously, his reputation. But I just think that, you know, this season, I think we've still got a hell of a chance of getting Europe. There's nine games left, 27 points on offer, still a lot of points to play for. Don't be wrong, as Pete said, it is going to be tough. You know, we haven't won in three now in the Premier League, so the form has been up and down since the new year. But, yeah, overall, I think we are where we are, and I think Carlo needs better players. I think I would like to see us better on the ball, moving through the thirds. Now, maybe Carlo doesn't feel he has the players to do it, but I think sometimes you've got to trust players and allow them to play sometimes. I think we're quite restrictive in the way we play currently. And I think, obviously, you know, it's trust of the back end that we haven't got pace at the back without Godfrey. And I don't know. There's a lot of machinations going on, I guess, with the managers thinking. But overall, I can understand the fans' frustration. But also, I don't think we need to have a memorandum on every player who we blame for the results every time we lose or draw, as it may be.
I mean, you mentioned trust there. We always talk about trust on the show and feel that Carl doesn't trust probably the bulk of the players that he's got, to be perfectly honest. And do we think that that's the main reason as to why, you know, we're not playing maybe to our full potential? I mean, you mentioned obviously as well the injuries you've got and had in centre midfield has forced his hand to go to this 5-3-2. But do you think, Andy, that trust is the biggest issue that we've got or Carl's got with the squad at the moment?
Yeah, I think it is. Obviously, Carlo as well has come from a lot of teams. You know, he's obviously managed Bayern, he's managed Milan, these all had great players in Real Madrid. And, you know, it's obviously a bit, you know, somewhat of a reality check for Carlos come to Everton, where the squad is, and they've got good, and it isn't as complete as those sides. So it is about him evolving as well as us evolving as a team. He obviously will get the better, try and get, will get the best out of the players. But yes, I think the trust is a massive issue. I think he sees holes in the team, which is, I think, why, you know, there's rumours he wants a Koulibaly type, because although Michael Keane and Yerry Mina are good centre-backs, and even, you know, Ben Godfrey as well, they're not players who can play out from the back and build attacks. You know, that's the key thing when he was at Napoli, when he came into Napoli. Sarri built a side that was really comfortable breaking the press and playing out from the back. And obviously Carlo in his early games had ever wanted to play out from the back, but I think he's realised that we just haven't got the horses to be able to do that. And I think when he hasn't got those building blocks, and then in midfield, apart from James, you don't really have many players who can break the ball into the final third or you find players in space consistently. And yeah, I guess it is. That is an issue. You know, people will go, oh, well, why haven't we signed this player and that player? Obviously, at the time, the managers wanted the players we signed, and you've got to look at it like that sometimes, rather than, oh, they should have seen this coming. You can't always see things like this coming when you change managers so consistently. I think that's been Everton's issue, and I think we now need an even keel couple of years, and maybe we have to take things as they come. I think, you know, it's not going to be a quick fix overall.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that it really is, and like you say, quite clearly, Carlo will be given a lot more time than previous managers, and rightly so. Like you say, the consistency that we need both on and off the pitch is massively important to our progression. And I totally, you know, he deserves it. The man should have time. There should be no question. I mean, you see silly comments about, you know, he's got to go and this, that, and the other. It's just ridiculous. You know, Carlo Ancelotti will be here hopefully for a good couple of years, 2 or 3 years yet. But if we can just jump back into the game, Pete, we're going to discuss Dominic Calvert-Lewin a little bit more detail shortly. Obviously, he had a few chances on the day, but one player who also had a number of chances on the day and also caused a bit of a rift between himself and two or three other players over a free kick was Richarlison. What were your thoughts on him, Pete? Because some people don't mind seeing that Richarlison quite clearly wanted to take the free kick because he'd missed a couple of chances, wanted to take the responsibility, you could argue, to score a goal. Other people see it as selfish and not being a team player, and, you know, it's not a good look. What are your thoughts on how that played out, Pete?
Well, look, it comes from a good place, doesn't it? You know, first and foremost, he was frustrated that I think he missed that chance in particular, where he sort of cut in, and he would normally just sort of bend it into the corner. But I think if you take the ball, you know, off sort of technical players who would normally take a free kick, you've got to take a really good free kick. It's either got to go in the top bin, or, you know, you've got to hit the target, and he didn't take a good free kick. And I think obviously that's where the frustration comes in. Ultimately it comes from a really positive place, doesn't it? You know, he's an aggressive player, he wants to win. He was probably more frustrated than anybody with his own performance, and that, I think the same can probably be said of Calvert-Lewin. I think, like you lads, I dislike this, you know, looking for a fall guy every time we get beat, and sort of certain players taking in turns, don't they? You know, some Tom Davies to Iwobi to Calvert-Lewin to Pickford. You know, ultimately, there's 11 players on the pitch. I feel for him. I'm sure he'll bounce back, and he tends to like a goal against Brighton. So fingers crossed he makes amends for it.
Do you think it was? Do you agree, Andy, with that in terms of, you know, Pete's quite positive about the whole thing, really, in terms of he sees it's coming from a good place with Richarlison. He's obviously hungry to score. Do you see it that way, or do you see it more of the old Kevin Morales taking the ball and taking a penalty against Stoke?
I don't mind players, you know, wanting to get Everton on the front foot, or wanting to, you know, take responsibility. You know, Gylfi Sigurdsson's had enough chance to score free kicks for Everton now. He just hasn't done it, really, has he? No, Richarlison missed the target. It wasn't a bad effort, to be fair, actually, in the end. At least they'd been at the wall or go miles over the bar, to be fair to him. But no, I've got no problem. I think that the overall issue is whatever you fall on. I think a lot of people love Richarlison. Obviously, you know, he's very infectious as a player. You know, his work rate and off the pitch, obviously, he loves winding up, you know, them over the roads. But I think if it was a Kevin Morales type character, Richarlison would have been chastised for it, because I think he's so liked. I think he can get away with things like that. I think a lot of personal like comes, you know, if it was Iwobi or Tom Davis who did that, you know, he'd be crucified, wouldn't he, really? Let's be honest, that you know, Iwobi had to say his preferred position, and there was all sorts of machinations over that. But that's Evertonians, and that's fandom, I guess. But no, I didn't mind particularly with Charleston doing that. Don't be wrong, obviously, you really want James Rodriguez taking those, but it was better for the right footer in that situation, and he nearly hit the target. I've got no problem with it at all, really. Small instance in the game.
Yeah, it was. I think obviously if we win the game, you probably don't even look back on that instance, to be honest with you. It's just it's a nothing incident. But obviously with what happened and with us obviously losing a couple of points in season later on, we always signed up back at these incidents, don't we? And look at them under a microscope. But one thing I want to ask about and bring up is the substitutes on the day. Obviously there was one enforced change with Andre Gomes picking up an injury, so Sigurdsson comes on. We saw Ben Godfrey come on for Seamus Coleman, who had a very, very good game. As Pete said, you know, he tends to marshal Wilfried Zaha very well over the years, and I thought he had one of his better games of the season yet again from Seamus Coleman. Now he had played three full internationals for Ireland, which was just ridiculous in the international break. So that probably explains why he ran out of legs, potentially. And obviously we saw the return, the long-awaited return and the welcome return of Jean-Philippe Gbamin, which was fantastic for James Rodriguez late on. But what do you think, Pete, about those changes? Obviously, Andre Gomes aside, would you prefer Carlo just to have gone, right, what we've got here, that was his attitude, what we have, we hold, we're 1-0 up, let's try and see the game out. Do you think it was right to make those changes? And more specifically, and as much as I was delighted to see him back on the pitch after, you know, a horrendous 18 months for him, do you think it was right to put Gbamin on with his only 1-0 up with 10 minutes to go?
Well, I mean, for me, the most surprising change was Coleman. I thought he'd been outstanding. So unless he'd had a knock or a little injury or he was looking a bit leggy, but I think to put Ben Godfrey there, you know, to come off, not be in the pace of the game. I know it wasn't a particularly fast-paced game, but for the defenders, you know, when you've got sort of you've got Zaha who can play anywhere across the line, he's looking for weakness. I mean, he's looking for someone that's, you know, not quite sort of you know, up to the pace, and he looks to sort of pull you in and drag you in. And I suppose you think, as good as Ben Godfrey is, when you look at his strengths, it, you know, it might not be sort of up close mobile defending against a tricky winger. So I thought he was put in a really difficult position, really. And Zaha sort of pulled him all over the place. And Van Aanholt obviously started being really aggressive up that side as well. So not necessarily saying it was a mistake, because what do I know? But I was surprised to see Coleman go off. And I think ultimately that change probably did play a role in us conceding the goal. In terms of Gbamin, I was chuffed to see him come on. You know, when he came on, I thought, it's just such a shame fans aren't there, because he would have got such a reception. It was great to see him come on and get some game time. But I think ultimately, again, it's about that quality of players and trusting the players. I mean, we've got Josh King on the bench there, and I think for me, it's the biggest statement of how he's seen the fact that, you know, we bring on sort of two central players, you know, and change our right back in a game where we're probably screaming out for a bit of width. You know, whether we're 1-0 up or not, you know, you want someone to get high up the pitch and run with the ball and keep their sort of wide players pegged back. So the fact that he wasn't able to come on and get some minutes, you know, when we're crying out for some width and some balance, particularly on that right hand side, I think says an awful lot about, he's probably not going to be with us at the end of the season, which is really strange, because I think when we signed him in the window, we were all saying it seems like a pretty shrewd signing, really. And whenever he's played against us, he's normally had a blinder.
Mm.
So it's a strange one. But I think ultimately it's about limited players. I think if Carlo would have had more options on the bench, I don't think he would have made the changes he did.
Mm. I mean, well, on Josh King, just to jump in about him, Carlo was asked yesterday in his press conference about him, and he said, the unfortunate thing about Josh King is because I've had to revert and had to change our style of play or formation to 5-3-2, it takes away basically one of the wider positions, if you like, that he can actually play in. So effectively, if he's going to come on, he's coming on for Richarlison or Calvert-Lewin, and that's it. You know, yeah, he can play wide, but if we're playing a five, if you like, he can't. He won't come on for a Luca Dean or James Coleman or.
Hang on. So what I want to ask you both is, don't kid a kidder. Do you believe that? Do the two of you believe that? Hang on. Do you believe it was because you wanted to stick with the 5-3-2? Why didn't bring him on?
No, I think Carlo, you know, is concerned about his work rate off the ball. I think that would be the main thing. I think that goes down to trust again. I think, obviously, if you bring Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison off, they work so hard off, you know, off the ball. I think, you know, that's the issue with Josh King. And I think, that, you know, going back to January, this is what I always say in January. It's very rare these January signs come in and score, you know, and set the world on fire. Some do. Some do. Look, Jesse Lingard, he's done really well, you know, for West Ham. Some do. But the majority don't, and especially strikers, because it's very hard, especially Josh King, who, let's be honest, wasn't fit when he was at Bournemouth because he tried to force a move in the summer. And it's not worked out. He's found it very hard to get up to speed. I think now he is up to speed. We're getting towards the end of the season. The manager's got this trust and he believes to finish games off for him, and he's just not there. And now, maybe he can earn himself a contract because Everton don't want to go out and spend money in the summer on a backup striker, because obviously we've got first team priorities really in upgrading. So we'll see what happens. He may not, let's be honest. On the subs, Carlo Ancelotti can be wrong. This is what Evertonians have to sort of accept. You can say, oh, Carlo got stuff wrong, or, you know, and it doesn't mean we want him out, because obviously we don't. I think every manager's, no manager's perfect. Alex Ferguson signed Djemba, Cleverson and Bebe. You know, people make mistakes at the end of the day. I wouldn't have brought Kabamon on in a game where you're 1-0 up and you're chasing Europe when he's that rusty. I wouldn't, that personally. I'm not a Champions League winner manager, so what do I know again, of course? But no, I think that was, don't be wrong, I think James probably needed to come off because you've got to protect him for these last, what, 9 or 10 games. But it's, and Coleman again, I think Carlo's scared of losing the right back. I think Coleman gives us a balance that we really don't have when he's not playing again. So I think you're trying to save the injuries. Godfrey, you know, at the end of the day, he's played well for Everton so far. He didn't have his best night when he came on. But, you know, really, what it all comes down to is, I think I, you know, jinxed us really, because I've been on the Batman's case for years. Because I think everyone, people accuse Dominic Calvert-Lewin being the Batman Batray, is that he doesn't do anything but score, and he doesn't score that as often as people think. But again, that's football, I guess. We can see that, you know, poor goal with miscommunication from Michael Keane and Yerry Mina went for the same ball, and Godfrey got too high, and, you know, he scored, and that happens sometimes. But no, I think Carlo did get something slightly wrong with the substitutions.
But like you say, though, he can get things wrong, and at the end of the day, it's always a judgment call when it comes to whether it's a change of formation, substitutes that you make on the day, you know, change of personnel. That's what he gets paid for. And at the end of the day, it doesn't always come off. You know, when Kabama, it surprised me because he mentioned Kabama before the start of the game and said, you know, he's going to look to try and give him minutes if he can, and that's great. And we all thought, well, if we're 2 or 3 up with about 10 minutes to go, throw the kid on and give him 10, 15 minutes or so. But I think there was a few eyebrows raised at that substitution at that particular time in the game when it's only 1-0. I mean, I'm not apportioning any kind of blame to Kabamon at all for the goal, but it was just strange when someone's been out for 18 months to actually be thrown on at that particular time. But like you say, we are allowed to say that. We can throw a bit of criticism if we need to Carlo's way and say he got something wrong, because everyone gets things wrong. That's the nature of football. And someone who got things wrong for most fans during the game, which it brings us nicely onto this particular section, is Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Now, Dominic Calvert-Lewin this season has scored 19 goals in all competitions. If you want to include international goals, which I don't really follow England, to be honest, but he scored four for England, which is great for him on a personal note. So on the day, Dominic Calvert-Lewin against Crystal Palace, it's fair to say he had a few clear-cut chances, big chances. Both him and Richarlison had big chances on the day. And during the game and after the game, I mean, as a three, within our group chat, we were saying how big the chances were, we can't afford to miss them, you know, and then when we eventually got the goal through James Rodriguez, obviously delighted by that. I'm sure both Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin felt a lot better the fact that we went ahead. But post-match, Dominic Calvert-Lewin got a hell of a lot of stick. And like we've already said, we always look for a fall guy. This week it was his turn. And Andy, you put out a fantastic graphic yesterday, the day before, from Market Insights, which highlights all of Dominic Calvert-Lewin's stats over the course of this particular season. And it's I'll you know, anyone who wants to look at it, we put out yesterday, we tweeted it, Andy, it's on your page as well. It's a really good thing to look at. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you put it out there to say to people to sort of lay off them a little bit and look at the bigger picture as opposed to just one game in isolation.
I find this is one of my biggest bugbears at the moment with Evertonians. It's just the criticism of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I think some didn't like him anyway, I think, from previous years. And what happens is some people can't just go, all right, I was wrong. Let's, I'm going to support him. I think people have to sort of say, I'm still right, and there's agendas. And I don't know, don't be wrong, I've always backed Dom. I think I didn't expect him to speak, they come this good in terms of goal scoring, I'll be honest, I never did, but I always thought he was someone who put himself about, and if he was going to be our backup striker, then great. You need someone who can be able to do that. But the last two seasons, he's scored, 27 goals now in the Premier League in the last two seasons, and obviously we've got more games to go. We'll get to the stats in a second, but I wonder what more Everton fans want. I see people mentioning Harry Kane. Everton can't get players of Harry Kane's level. Not now, maybe in a couple of years. Well, maybe we'll have someone to fight it out with Dom for the number nine spot, but now I don't ever want to say Dominic Calvert-Lewin is the best Everton can get, because I'm not going to say that, but he's one of the best strikers in the Premier League this season. And this is available. Forget the graph that I put out, because obviously that's from my company. It's obviously a lot of information for people to take in. But if you go on the BBC website, put Premier League top goal scorer, and you can see the conversion rates of all the strikers. Now, Dominic Calvert-Lewin currently has a conversion rate of 25%, which means one in every four shots that he gets on target, he's putting in the back of the net. Everyone's favourite, Gary Kane, 22%, which is less than Dom. He takes many more shots than Dominic Calvert-Lewin. So Dominic Calvert-Lewin is converting at a higher rate. So people say he never scores one-on-ones, he can't score from outside the box. That may be true. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, don't get me wrong, has still got a lot of development to do as an all-round striker. However, he's still converting at a higher rate than Bamford, Vardy, Watkins, all these players that people seem to want over him. And don't be wrong, he can improve his creative side of his game. But again, if you look at the graph that brought, final third pass accuracy, that which is basically where he receives the ball, holds it up and lays it off, again, excellent. And I could go on for an hour here, but I don't know what you guys think, but I just think that some perspective's needed, and sometimes people pick players apart far too much when actually they're really important. And the main stat I'm going to give you now is Dominic Calvert-Lewin's goals have gained the most points this season in the Premier League of any player. 14 goals have got 14 points for Everton. We would be in close to the relegation battle without those goals. Now, someone said on Twitter, well, the average striker could have scored those goals. Is Shea Adams really going to shoot Everton close to the top six? I don't think so. So be serious. Come on.
What are your thoughts, Pete, on the outcry? Obviously, listen to what Andy's saying there. Totally spot on. And my thing with Calvert-Lewin is, and we've discussed him at length at various points this season, is it's all well and good saying, like Andy's saying, any average striker, people say any average striker could score those goals. It's all in the movement, and it's all in, getting into the space, the time of the run, the footballing brain, which he's developed, I think, more than anything else in the last probably 12 or 18 months under Ancelotti. But what are your thoughts on the outcry after the game? It clearly wasn't justified, was it?
Well, look, number one, it's a cliche, isn't it? But, you always have to say a striker has to be in the position to miss them. You've got to do everything right to miss them. So I think that's the, the first point, and that goes without saying. But I think the interesting thing about Calvert-Lewin for me is I think he's technically a really excellent football player. And one of the reasons I think sometimes people get outraged or, sort of levy these accusations that he's not good enough or he's average, is I think sometimes some of the chances he misses are the types of opportunities that, someone that's been trained to play as a striker would probably put away. So that, the first one-on-one, that sort of long ball through from Holgate, I think a lot of fans will look at that and think, you coach day in, day out on where to sort of play that ball. And I wonder sometimes for Dom, when he's almost got a little bit too much time to sort of pick his spot and it's less instinctive, he can make the wrong decision sometimes. I think if you're whipping balls into the box, I want Calvert-Lewin in there on the end of it all day long, because I think he's technically really good. I think, like Andy said, his conversion rate's excellent. He'll put them away. But I just think every now and then, he has a little bit too much time. He tries to make a decision and it doesn't quite come off. And I think they're the chances that almost get highlighted and become part of a highlight really shouldn't have, really. And then people jump on the back of it and think, well, yeah, you know, Harry Kane or a top, top striker would score that, and that's what Everton don't have, and that's what we're needing. You know, maybe there's a little bit of truth in that, but he's so young. He's, you know, he's still developing, and hopefully, you know, let's not destroy him. Let's continue to coach him and support him. And again, he's got the number nine shirt, and that counts for a lot at Everton. And when he scores, he's loved, and we need to back him when he has a difficult game, and hopefully, like Richarlison, he'll bounce back against Brighton. But yeah, I think it's something about decision making, and that certain chances get highlighted. And I think sometimes fans struggle to have a bit of perspective, I think, when chances look easy when really they're not.
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes I think with strikers especially, fans always compare them to the likes of the Brazilian Ronaldo, for example, who was a once in a lifetime talent. You know, he's just an exceptional player. Wayne Rooney, obviously, we saw him first hand as a young kid. That kind of quality of player, you know, you can't compare every single player that you've got, especially as a striker, to the top players in that position over the last, say, 15, 20 years. You just can't do it, because they were special, special talents. The point with Calvert-Lewin is, if we look at where he was 18 months, 2 years ago, he would have been laughed at if you would have said, he's going to bag 20 goals next season. Everyone like, oh, whatever, yeah. There's no, he's not going to get over, say, 10 or 12, whatever it might be. The kid's one goal away from getting 20 goals in you know, a half-decent season. But, you know, a season when we've said already, maybe we could have done better. Maybe we were at the level that we should be. But to score, you know, 19, 20 goals in this side, I think is very, very good. And one question I want to ask you, Andy, is the two major chances that he missed against Palace. There was one where Holby played a fantastic ball from the back right through, which we all missed because Sky were showing us a replay. Yeah. But it was a great, great ball through. Calvert-Lewin obviously is eye to eye with the goalkeeper. Like Pete said, maybe a bit too much thinking time, and he's just hit it right at the keeper, dead, dead straight. And obviously it's saved. And the second one in the second half where he's being slipped in again, and he was almost waiting for it to come across his body a bit more to open himself up a little bit to maybe slide it in. And again, the keeper saved it. In those situations, Andy, where he has got quite a bit of time, do you think that can be taught for a player who, you know, if you look back at where he started his career in centre midfield, and he wasn't probably a natural striker, do you think that can come? Do you think that can be taught? Or do you think that's something that he's going to really struggle to work on and get better at?
I could say yes and I could say no. It's very difficult to know. That ice in your veins striker thing is, it sometimes is a natural ability. You know, some players can go on score a lot of goals who haven't got that ability. I think the key with Dom, I think the major thing is he's probably one of the hardest workers ever they've got. People, you've got to understand that this is a lad who works on his craft, Duncan Ferguson, who spend a lot of time together working, you know, on becoming a better player, which some players at Everton don't do as much. So I think he's always going to work on his craft. His movement is excellent. You know, he's always getting separation from his markers, which is key. I think if the service had been better at times this season, he would have more goals even. I think there was a period where we weren't getting crosses into the box. Now, if he was, you know, this all-round player who could do everything, he wouldn't be at Everton, he'd be at Real Madrid, Barcelona, wherever. So there's got to be some perspective there. I agree, he does need to get better in certain faster scheme, taking the Everton and Dominic Calvert-Lewin fan hat off. I always say to people, back to goal, Dom is really great. Great holding the ball up. Facing defenders 1v1, running with the ball at defenders, not so great. That's part of his game that really does need to get better. His decision-making and, you know, creating those angles where he can get shots off as well. That's the next evolution. Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I think that, you know, my biggest issue out of all of this is if the biggest issue in the side is your top goal scorer and the person who's getting you the most points, is the rest of the side Galacticos? I just don't think it is. I think you've got to have some perspective. Unless he's the biggest problem in the team, and the day that he is the biggest problem in the team, then yes, replace him. But until he's the biggest problem or the biggest issue in the team, then why do we have to always like try and bring him down? Don't be wrong, he could be better, yes. And I think Everton's fans' patience are running short, and goals do win games, of course, and obviously we didn't score enough goals tonight to win the game. But I think we just need a bit of perspective sometimes. The lad's come on a lot over the last couple of years. He will improve. Will he become a top European striker? Maybe, maybe not. But if he's a very good Premier League striker, and he's one of our two strikers, because eventually we will sign another striker when we get start playing Champions League football, we hope. Then what's the issue? Are Everton in a bad situation? Then no, I think people need to be a bit careful in the criticism really of him, because if he went elsewhere, we'd be crying for 4 years like we were with Lukaku, all trying to replace him. And he's not Lukaku. Let's be honest, Lukaku is a better player currently. Lukaku's 4 years older than Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Harry Kane's 4 years older. Sometimes you shouldn't compare players who are pre-peak or early peak to players like Ronaldo, Messi, or players who've done it all. You need to wait sometimes to compare them because they haven't developed as much. So I think Everton fans just need to rein it in a bit, really, I'm going to be honest.
And on that point as well, about Lukaku, that's one thing that really, really gets on my nerves. And I was going to tweet something the other day and I didn't. I just, one of those things where you delete tweets, you write something and you delete it, don't you? And you just like, I'll leave it there. Because you've got to be so careful. And when something doesn't go right or play as a bad game, and obviously Calvert-Lewin was the four guy against Crystal Palace, and people always go back to and look at former players or former players in that position and, oh, Lukaku wouldn't have missed that. And, well, Lukaku's not an Everton player. Lukaku didn't want to be an Everton player. And he moved on, and we got big money, and everyone's happy. And you can't always just go back. It's like, oh, Kinsella's, because he would have been great in that position there. Well, yeah, 25 years ago, people just need to sort of, we should be a forward-thinking club. We're all looking forward to, this move to Bramley Moor, which is massive. We're on the right path as a club now. We should be looking totally forward and not looking back at what's come before, And when people do that, it massively, massively winds me up. We all know Lukaku is a very, very good striker. For us, he was a good striker. But, like I said, it doesn't help any situation to go back and look at older players.
Do people remember what people used to say about Lukaku when he played at Everton? People always had a bad first touch. He can't do this. He can't do that. Yeah. And now, obviously, whatever they say, better than the devil you know, I guess. Now he's this player who is the best striker we ever had. And don't be wrong, he probably is the best striker I've ever seen in Everton. Some weird people say, Yakubu was good, but not Rom's level, let's be honest. But no, I think you're right. I think there's got to be some perspective sometimes. Enjoy what Dominic Calvert-Lewin's doing. Yes, he'll make mistakes. He'll miss chances, strikers do. Someone put a stat up today about missing big chances. I think he's missed 15 this season. And as I said, Salah missed 23 the other year. Aubameyang missed 23. Players miss big chances. Strikers miss chances. Someone said, Drogba, Henry and Aguero just needed one chance to score. Well, there's 90 games where Sergio Aguero didn't score for Man City. So that's not true, is it, really? So I think sometimes you've got to just think about these things before you overreact sometimes. As you can see, I'm quite passionate about the subject.
But no, totally agree. And I'm sure the vast majority of people are guilty of that knee-jerk reaction. And that's why I think it helps just to sit back and take a few days before looking back on these kind of things. But, Dom's going to reach his 20-goal target this season. Wouldn't surprise me if he gets to 25. Obviously, needs to pick up his form a little bit. But do you think, you mentioned obviously Josh King, and in the summer, our money is probably going to go elsewhere as opposed to on a secondary striker, if you like. But do you think it would be Josh King who comes in, or do you think we're going to get sort of luck maybe for a little low, maybe somewhere for a backup striker?
I'm interested to see what happens. That's one thing I can't predict. I think obviously we'd like more goals off the bench. We definitely need it. I think obviously it's well known that Moise Keane's probably going to go to probably Paris Saint-Germain or maybe Juventus if they find money from somewhere. But it's hard to tell. Obviously we've been linked with different players from the Championship, like Adam Armstrong at Blackburn, who's a pretty good player. obviously we need that, something different off the bench. But as you say, if we had a right back who's creating chances, Max Aarons obviously has been mentioned, and you know, others. If we had another midfielder who could create chances, a winger coming in to create chances, then wouldn't Dom have more chances to score? Some might say more chances to misses, of course, if you had the glass half full sort of person. But no, I think Dom will benefit from those, you know, those signs. The backup striker thing for me is, if you've got a limited amount of money, don't spend a lot of it on a backup, because if you've got first team positions that really need filling, I think Gabamon hopefully will partly fill one position. But then I think, you know, if we could get rid of Delph, you know. You know, Gavi Sigurdsson's coming to the end of his contract as well, unless he signs a new one. Gomez, we'll see. You know, Tom Davis, we'll see. You know, I think the centre midfielder would be nice. So, you know, I think we've just got to be careful how we spend the money. You know, it'd be all nice to spend, you know, to bring in a world class striker, but I think we've got other priorities, you know, in before that, really.
Mm. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the summer window plays out and who comes in. But Josh King's been linked to Celtic, I think I've seen recently. Because
he's going to go there, I think, yeah. It looks like it's going to be done. So, but yeah. He might go there, and he'd probably start because Edouard's moved to the Premier League. So, yeah, again, I think Josh King, you know, I think a lot of things have gone against him. I think the manager obviously hasn't had the manager's trust. Where they'll look at it and go, he's on a free transfer. He scored 16 goals in the league a couple of seasons ago. He's, you know, should we give him another season or two just because we haven't got that money to bring in? That might be an option, and I would probably be fine with that overall. I don't think I'd rather us not go, you know, spend 20 million on a backup striker and then not work out. So I've got no problem with that if Josh King stays as well.
Mm-hmm. Interesting to see. But we'll move on from the Dominic Calvert-Lewin debate and look ahead to Monday night, another Monday night fixture, absolute nightmare yet again. Playing Monday, Friday, aren't we? Brighton Monday, Spurs Friday. So a quick turnaround there. But Brighton away Monday, Pete. And Brighton are a funny side for me. I think they always promise to sort of pull away from the relegation zone more than they actually do. And when I've seen them, I've always thought they look all right. They got a few individually half decent players. I thought they gave a good account of themselves against Man United last weekend as well. But it's certainly not going to be a game where it's all going to go our way, is it?
No, I think it's going to be a really, really tough game. And yeah, they're a strange team for me. I think they're a lot like that sort of Wolves team of one or two years ago, but without the sort of quality players. I don't think the squad's particularly good, but I really like Graham Potter. I really like the style of football he tries to get them to play, and I think they're one of those sides that are really ingrained in a certain style and system playing football that all the players know really well. And what that means is some weeks they can play outstanding. But I think they're one of those teams that they could often dominate games and lose, and they've been quite suspect at the back. I think particularly earlier on in the season, they really struggled defensively. They look like they've improved that a little bit now, but I think it'll be a really, really hard game. And I think my worry is if Carlo feels, because of the squad and the players that he's got available, we've got to go there with the back five, I think we get beat. Mm. I think probably more for the simple reason we're playing sort of fitter, fresher players who know the system better. And I think probably that'll ultimately decide the game. I think if we can go there with a little bit more balance, particularly going forward in attack, then hopefully we can get something out of it. But, you know, it's easy to say, but it's another must win, isn't it? You know, we have to win to stay in the European race. I think Champions League probably gone now. When you look at the strength of Chelsea, or they've had a bit of a slip up recently. But hopefully we can still get into the Europa League places.
For those who don't know, Andy, what is Brighton's style? You know, how do you think Brighton are going to set up against us?
Potter likes to control the ball, and you know they like very based on movement off the ball as well. I think they're not like a Pep Guardiola because they don't have the same quality of player, but they like to move the ball through the lines, get pace, use the wing backs to sort of create overloads on the left and the right. What this is really is a matchup of, maybe before the Palace game, obviously, because we missed chances. This is the most clinical or overly clinical side in the Premier League, and Everton which is why I think, you know, if Everton stop being clinical, we will end up dropping points, because this season Everton have overperformed massively in terms of being clinical. I think we were 37%, which was, I think, 7 or 8% higher than anywhere else at the time in the league. Or, you know, sorry, 11%. I think it was a couple of percent higher than anyone else in the league, which is worrying in the sense that, you know, I think if that stops, we will drop points. On the flip side, Brighton, a very profligate side, they create a lot of chances. They've actually created more quality chances than Everton this season in terms of the dreaded XG stats. But they just haven't got the finishes of Dominic Calvert-Lewin or Richarlison, or, you know, we scored a lot of corners and free kicks as well. I think this is going to be an interesting game. Obviously, Everton, I think we can hurt them. I think we've got the players to hurt them. It's just as Pete says, I think, you know, Brighton seems to be rounding into some sort of form, and if they can, you know, score goals, you know, it could be a difficult game for us. You know, we've got Trossard, McAllister, who cause teams problems. Bissouma in midfield, if Allen's not fit, will give us issues as well. And don't get me wrong, I think Everton, realistically, you know, should have enough to beat Brighton. It's just the way we seem to be. If we're not clinical again, if we do have start missing chances more regularly, I think we will start dropping more points than we did, you know, earlier on in the season where we were so clinical, and that could be an issue, really.
I mean, Pete mentioned there, you know, we're playing five at the back, and it could be to our detriment. I mean, do you think we are going to stick with the five at the back, or are you going to go to a 4-3-3 or 4-1-2-1-2, if you want to spin it?
The issue I found is what happened was Charleston obviously got those couple of games playing centre forward and scored, and I think the manager thought, yeah, I'm going to get Richarlison next to Dom. And I think it's thrown us out of whack because I don't like the 4-3-1-2 with Hammers behind. I think it just leaves us so open and wide areas. And I don't think we've got the midfielders with the legs without Zuccori, Allen and probably Gabamon being fit. So I would go back to the 4-3-3 and have Hammers, Rome and me. I think that, you know, give us a bit of stability in midfield. If you play five, don't get me wrong, it gives Luka Dean a chance to get forward, but it also allows people to get, you know, you're going to have to play Mina. Well, I'm guessing you're going to have to play, you know, Mina and Keane together with Holgate or Godfrey. You know, I think it'd be best if you played Mina with Godfrey and Holgate either side of them for defending in those wide areas. But obviously, Carlo does like Michael Keane. So it's a difficult one. I think 4-3-3 suits us better. I think this game might suit us because they will want possession, and we can allow us to sit back a bit more. I would just prefer to see Richarlison out wide again and give us and spread teams out rather than, as Pete rightly put it, we tend to go a bit more direct. I don't think it works as often as we'd like, as it would have rather us try and build, you know, build through the thirds, really.
Mm-hmm. Where does that leave Ben Godfrey then? Because obviously you mentioned most potentially coming in either side, but I always have, when I'm thinking about who's going to start the game, I'm always thinking about, for me, Ben Godfrey has got to start because of his pace. That's because I think we're quite a slow side anyway.
Yeah.
So having someone with the legs of Ben Godfrey really helps. But then obviously Luka Dean, one of the best left backs obviously in the Premier League, he's got to start the game as well. I always find it difficult to try and fit these players in, you know, because Coleman as well, good game against Palace. Does he keep his place? Does Hoggy go out to right back? What do you see the defence being against Brighton?
For me, and you know, whether that I'm right, I'm not a Champions League winner manager. I would play Dean left back, and I'd give him a license to run up and down. I would probably play Mina and Holgate as the pair at centre back. I think that gives you more balance than Mina and Keane. And I think Mina's, you know, I know this is going to be sacrilege to some people, but I think Mina's a better centre half than Michael Keane. I think Michael Keane, when he's in a specific role, is really great. I think when we're defending deep, heads everything out, wins balls, when he's defending a small space. When you ask him to do a lot more in defended space, a bit more difficult. I think Yerry Mina is a bit better, don't get me wrong. Yerry Mina does have to, you know, make the odd mistake, but overall, I just think he's a better defender for me. And then I'd have either, depending on what you want to do, I think if you want a bit of a threat from right back, you play Coleman, or you can do what we did last season. We haven't seen it as much this season, and I don't know why. We're in possession, the right back became the third centre half then, and then you could allow Dean to push up the pitch, but you still got those three in midfield and those three wide players to stretch teams. I'd like to see us do that again. So that would be me. Whether we do that, I don't know. I think Carlo will probably, you know, stick with it, maybe go back to the four centre-backs and maybe play Dean higher and keep Coleman higher up again. I don't know. I don't think he's going to go that defensive against Brighton, but it wouldn't surprise me either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always a massive predicament that for me. But like you say about Yerry Mina, you know, I think I think this season he's probably shown even more consistency after a good start to last season. I think he tailed off, but I think he's had a decent season. What would be your pick, Pete, for your back four? Because I'm interested to find out your thoughts in terms of what's your preferred defensive setup.
I'd probably go slightly different. I think Luca Dean's a given, obviously, but then I'd probably go with Godfrey and Keane centre half, just because I think Michael Keane's more consistent than Yerry Mina. And I also think he gives you a lot more going forward, not necessarily in the transition or on the ball, but I think on corners and set pieces. He's been great for us, I think. And I think he's got a lot of leadership. I think he's quite good with the players around him, Michael Keane. And I'd probably go with Coleman right back. I think that'd be my pick of a back four as it stands.
Mm. I think obviously the summer's going to be interesting in regards to the right back position. We mentioned Max Ahrens already. He seems to be the big name mentioned. Do you think he's going to come in, Andy? Just to take your opinion on that.
Without saying too much, I think Kevin have spoke to Norwich. Certainly got a price, and there's an idea of what it costs. I think we're doing that with other players, though. I think we've watched Ridley Bach, who plays for Wolfsburg, play right wing, centre midfield or right back. He's a really good player. We've probably watched others like Emerson at Betis, Junior Sambia at Montpellier, players like that. So I think Evan will be well scouted and obviously have options. I think Max Ahrens being English and his familiarity with Ben Godfrey in the Premier League, maybe he will be the pick. Maybe. It depends on obviously the manager supposedly hasn't finalised. He's obviously started looking at players, but I'm guessing he's still yet to find, because the season's on go. Managers don't always get the chance to finalise their side of the shortlist. Obviously, Evans' recruitment team will have. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think Ahrens is a good player. He's got room to grow. I think, obviously, is he a Champions League level right back eventually? Maybe. I think he's got a couple of things to improve. He's can be quite hesitant in the final third in terms of decision making. Some people getting Coleman's back as he turns around the passing. Ahrens can be guilty of that. And defensively, luckily, obviously, Carlo being an Italian manager will work on that as well. But yeah, good player. I've got no problem. I've no problem with Evan signing. I wouldn't be spending 35 million, though. I think that'd be quite a bit expensive. If we get it for under 30, then yeah, all day. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. But I mean, he seems to be the name, doesn't he, getting bandied down quite often. But whether or not people would, like you say, want to pay that elevated price for an English right back instead of looking at the players that you mentioned there, Andy, instead and getting them probably half the price or certainly less than what you pay for Max Ahrens is a different matter. But that's certainly one of the areas that we'll surely look to improve in the summer. But let's have your predictions then. Tough game, as we've said. Brighton 6 points above the relegation zone as things stand at the moment. Andy, what are we saying? Score prediction?
I've got a horrible feel it'll be another 1-1. Which I don't think it'll impress Everton's Twitter, but there you go.
Pete?
I'm going to give you two predictions. I think if we play with a back five, we lose 2-1. I think if we play with a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3, we get the 1-0 win, I think.
I'm on the draw camp as well, And it seems a bit bad saying that. I know it is. It's just how we're going at the moment. I just can't see us winning the game. And I'd love to be proven wrong. I really would. Hopefully I am. But I'm going to say 2-2. I think there'd be a couple of goals. But hopefully we're wrong and we do get the 3 points, because they are massively needed if we want to get anywhere near qualifying for Europe next season. But that's us for this week, Andy. Many thanks for replacing Eddie the Eagle today.
No worries, enjoy it as usual.
he should be back next weekend as we look back on the Brighton game and also the Spurs game, which is going to be happening on Friday as well. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues. Three opinions. One Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.